I'm Andrea Loyan, Vermont Edition producer, and I just wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today is Veterans Day, a time to honor the service of people who served the United States in the armed forces and those who died in uniform. This Veterans Day is a particularly significant one for the Vietnam Vets community. Next spring marks the 50th anniversary of the official end of that war in 1975. Vietnam veterans represent nearly 10% of their generation, according to the U.S. Army. They fought under grueling conditions, and when their service ended and they returned home, they didn't always receive a hero's welcome, as the war was deeply controversial in the United States. Today on the show, we want to acknowledge all veterans, but in particular, we are hoping to share the stories of those who served in Vietnam. Are you a Vietnam vet? What does this 50th anniversary mean to you? Does it bring up specific memories of your time in Vietnam or your return? Or perhaps you are Vietnamese. How did this war affect you and your family? Give us a call at 800-639-2211. You can also send us an email with your thoughts to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. We have two very special guests today here in the studio with us to help us mark this occasion. First, we have Perry Melvin of Shelburne. He's the president of the Vermont Vietnam Veterans State Council. He served with the Combined Action Platoon Unit 135 as a Navy corpsman and served with the Marines. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you.
We're also joined today by Maureen Dwyer of Essex. She served as an Army nurse from 1967 to 1970 and spent a year in Vietnam where she was stationed at the 67th Evacuation Hospital. Maureen, welcome. And I'm worried I've already made a mistake. You are shaking your head. Please correct me.
So happy to be here, Michaela. I was in the Army from 1967 to 1970, but I was stateside for the first I was in school and then stateside for the first year. So in Vietnam from 1969 to 1970.
Yes, you spent 1 year in Vietnam. Well, we're so glad to have both of you here with us today. Again, our number is 800-639-2211 if you would like to join this conversation. Let's go back to the very beginning of both of your services. Perry, why did you enlist? Did you enlist or were you recruited?
Yes, I did enlist. I just felt at that point in time it was my father had been in the service, and I just felt I had an obligation to one serve my country, and decided that rather than go to the Army where my father was, and then I had years of that as a Army brat, decided to go in the Navy.
How old were you?
I was 18 years old.
18 years old. Did you at that time, I mean, it might be hard to remember what you were thinking when you were 18, but do you remember, I don't know, having a full understanding of what it would mean to enlist? What was ahead of you? Did you feel ready because this was something that, you know, you'd seen in your family?
Somewhat, but somewhat not. There were a lot of expectations I had that really didn't manifest. So it was a very different experience, a little shocking to me. I think it was more so to those that really hadn't had the experience, in other words, a father or brother or someone that had been in the service previously, so that they at least had a sense of what to expect.
Mm. Maureen, tell us about when you first got connected to the Army.
Well, I was in a four-year nursing program, a very small college in Western Maryland, which was a liberal arts college with an extremely wonderful nursing major, and I was to graduate in 1968. At that time, the war, Vietnam War, was very much at its peak in those years. I think Tet happened in 1968, the Tet Offensive. And to be an Army nurse, you had to have a bachelor's degree, and the four-year bachelor programs were very new compared to the state three-year hospital-based program. So there were many recruiters on our campus in my junior year from the Army and Navy. And I and several others took advantage of a program to where the Army would pay for your junior or senior year. You would be an enlisted rank until 6 months before graduation and then become commissioned as a second lieutenant and owe 2 years of service for 1 year senior year and 3 years if junior and senior year, and tuition was paid for. But that wasn't the reason. I just really felt everybody I knew was being drafted left and right across all spectrums, professionals, educated to, grade school education to college degree. Yeah. And I wanted to serve and help with these new nursing skills I was graduating with.
Perry, did you also feel like Maureen was, that everybody around you was being pulled into this war effort, either through enlisting or being drafted?
Several of my classmates went into the service prior to me. I knew others around, where I was living in Burlington, that had joined or were drafted. So I figure rather than wait till I was drafted, I might as well go in, as several of the people I knew just enlist and go in. Mm.
Let's talk about your training before you were sent abroad. Maureen, first, tell us about what it was like getting ready to go to this place you'd never been before.
Let me start by saying these were tumultuous times. As an anecdote, I graduated college on January 6th, 1968. Rose Kennedy was to speak at our graduation as a guest speaker. Bobby Kennedy got shot the night before. Wow. And we woke up that morning and were told, of course, Rose would not be there. And I don't know, I can't remember who they got to speak, but it was shocking. And there was much protesting going on. I can't remember the year Martin Luther King was assassinated, but there was just a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So I graduated, and then I had to take my boards, and then we all went to the medical training base was Fort Sam Houston, Texas, in San Antonio, where it was a six-week training course, and it was, by today's standards, very mild. We marched and had to do a MAP course, but it was more training to hospital-based paperwork and military hospital protocols, and it was it was nothing like what I think combat soldiers go through. Yeah. And I think today it's very different. But that, and then I got, as far as, I was sent to Fort Knox, Kentucky for a year, where many soldiers were evacuated to stateside and European hospitals from Vietnam. Infection rate was very high, so I was taking care of a lot of infected orthopedic surgical wounds on my ward. Mm-hmm. And then you elevated in rank very quickly in those days, and I became a first lieutenant while I was at Fort Knox, and I became head nurse of the psychiatric unit because there was an opening in the rank.
How old were you?
Oh, I was 22.
Head nurse.
Well, everything was by rank back then, and I loved that job. I did a lot of counseling and played a lot of ping pong, but I will say I learned so much from the corpsmen and the medics as an army nurse. It's a very different, way of delivering healthcare than the civilian world. But then I got orders to Vietnam. If you would not get sent there if you had less than a year in the Army, and I got orders. And my friend Nancy, who was a college classmate of mine, right before the end of my first year, and we had asked to go to the We flew to Travis Air Force after a 30-day leave with my family in New Jersey. We flew to Travis Air Force Base in California, and we requested, we got some more training for Vietnam based hospitals, and then we requested to be assigned to the 67th Evacuation Hospital to the chief nurse in Vietnam. We wrote a letter to her where two of our other classmates were. And then you take these chartered planes, 24 hours with a stop in Hawaii and Guam, American chartered planes with many soldiers. And as we got off at Long Binh, not far from Saigon, and the plane gets quieter and quieter and quieter as you get close to landing. Mm. And then all those going home kind of wave at us as they're leaving country and we're coming.
Wow, the weight of that.
There was
really
no preparation, I can say, for arrival there.
Well, Perry, do you remember what those months were like ahead of your deployment to Vietnam? Do you feel like you got the training that you needed? And how old were you?
I was just turning 19 about the time I actually went to my core school. I'd already did basic training, and the core school was in Great Lakes, Illinois. The old barracks that were World War II, but it was 8 weeks, very compressed program. You got a lot out of it, but not as much as you'd like. Then I was assigned to Newport, Rhode Island, the hospital, and I spent almost a year there. And it was good. I did everything from sweeping, cleaning the floor, handing out trays, then going in and getting the medication. We'd always have a nurse there if we were doing any type of narcotics or anything else. She would get them out and count them. We'd count them together, and then I would administer that. So it's really everything from cleaning to administering, learned an awful lot, and also got the chance to get down to the – I was actually on pediatrics and maternity. Those are the floors I thought. But fortunately, they sent me down to the emergency room, so I got a lot of chance to do suturing and other things I was going to need to do when I got to Vietnam. So it was interesting.
I feel safe being near both of you. You have a lot of very important life skills. Maureen was just describing that flight into mm-hmm. Vietnam. Do you remember your arrival?
Oh, yeah. She described it well. You come in, it got quiet, and then you came down. And the first thing I remember, I think everybody does, when they open that door, the heat that came in was incredible. It's like, holy mackerel, I'm here. And you got out, you're walking out there, and there's this group waiting to take your plane, and they're all waving, exciting. So they, oh, man, I've got, 13 months, here to make it through to be where they are.
Mm. Maureen, do you remember the heat?
I do, and what I will share, because Long Binh was just a 3-day replacement station. It was muddy, but you could see artillery and because the monsoons were coming, and a lot of rain, and you could see the artillery and the mountains around you. And we got our assignments to Quy Nhon, the 67th Evac, which was on the coast further north, and there was an airfield next to the hospital where we were. It was an old Navy hospital, some concrete buildings and Quonset huts. Many of the hospitals were just Quonset huts in Vietnam. They were a little smaller and more rural. And the minute Nancy and I landed, we were supposed to be met by, we took a plane to Nha Trang below Quy Nhon and then a chopper helicopter to Quy Nhon to land it on the airfield. And we were to be met by the administrative people of the hospital. And the minute we landed, there was a sapper charge to the airport. Mm. There was rocketed. And we, yellow alert, yellow alert, everybody to the bunker, everybody's running. Nancy and I are in our shiny new helmet and our combat boots and our fatigues and our duffel bag. Talk about green. And We're looking at each other with like doe-shaped eyes and these two, like not knowing where to go. And these two sergeants like took a look at us and said, come with us. And we went around this building and they said the perimeter, all concertina wire was being attacked. And they said, get behind us. They pulled out their revolver. And I thought, holy moly, I'm definitely not in Kansas anymore here. And that was the reality to me. Any war movie I ever saw didn't come close to really understanding what being in a war zone was about.
Wow.
And that was my introduction to to Quynh-Yan, Vietnam.
Oh, my gosh. So, what an introduction. Mm-hmm. Perry, do you remember the first time that you came under fire or saw combat there?
Yeah, I first was assigned to the 26th Marines, and we're on the Old Valley Forge. And that first day, we had to load up and everything, carry on your back, 2 days' worth of food and ammunition and stuff. And I had my bag with medical bag. Then we went up top deck, and there were the Sea Knights, and we loaded up in those things, and they flew us in, and then the the tailgate would come down, and and you heard the crew chiefs tell you, get off my plane. Got off your plane. And I remember that that first night we had set up a couple posts, and I was assigned to watches at that night, and we got hit. And all I can remember is the machine guns going off and everybody else's rifles and stuff. And the noise was just deafening. Of course, we're also getting, shots coming in, and it was just crazy. Mm. And that was my first exposure to, and it was pretty profound. And remember that for sure.
Yeah, these seem like experiences that have really stuck with you through the years in a very visceral way. I want to share an email that we just got from a listener named Patrick, who writes, I'm a Vietnam combat veteran from the U.S., now living in Bedford, Quebec. Since I've been here, I consider Vermont my home state. I frequently use the VA facilities in Burlington and White River. In 2016, I started working part-time for the Veterans Transition Network of Canada. I've learned to live with the experiences of war, and through the program, I often assist as a peer supporter. I'm remembering the nine men lost on August 14th, 1969. I lost my best friend in Vietnam. It was my first day as a crew chief after 6 months of infantry, and I had thought the worst was over. As I look to the southeast, I'll be thinking of you guys. And Patrick also shares some names. Gil Wilfong, Jack Apodaca, James Hymens, Jeff Elson, Mel Grant, Horatio Huston, Richard Kilwine, and John Kufner. Well, thank you so much, Patrick, for writing in. If there's someone you would like to remember today, you can also call or email us as well. Before we get back to both of your experiences, I'm wondering if you might be able to share what Veterans Day more broadly means to you and your community. Is this a particularly poignant day, or are these memories really with you year-round, and you wish these conversations were happening more often? Perry, we'll start with you.
We have a very nice program in Shelburne. The community comes to the park in Shelburne. Veterans come in. We have a speaker. And after that's over with, they have all the veterans line up, and all of the townspeople come through and shake their hands and thank them. And so it's really nice. I think it's important to recognize Veterans Day, but I find it, I guess a little disheartening that I can walk down through, and I did today, part of Shelburne Road, and had my hat on and walk by people. Very few people acknowledge that. But the people that did, it was wonderful, having them come up and say thank you. It to me, it's a very special day because the people I've lost there, the people I knew, got to know, and the people I know now that come back, I see on occasion, that it's important to remember that.
Hmm. Maureen, what do you think? What are your reflections this Veterans Day?
Well, you know, I feel fortunate. The past few years, we've had the Vermont Town Halls based on the book Tribe by a author, last name Unger, where storytelling is very important and healing for many veterans, especially combat veterans. And I spoke yesterday again at any veteran can speak 10 minutes in an audience, and it was at St. Michael's College, and there are different ones throughout the state right now. Wonderful organizers. And I always try, I reflect on my time. I was 23 years old when I was in Vietnam, and I became head nurse, a captain, eventually I was serving on a surgical trauma ICU unit while I was there. But I try to bring my experience relevant to the present, and I have such respect for anybody who served then. We were like a family. I knew many, both patients as well as loved ones, who have lost their lives in that conflict. I feel honored that I served. It formulated a lot of my philosophy of life, professionally and personally through the years, more about unity and what we share in common as human beings rather than what divides us. And I feel that experience has helped me really find that peace truly starts from within. And I feel that time of war, so to speak, really somehow brought a sense of unity. And when I say that, I mean not just to our own military and country, but also to all those that we served in Vietnam. We took care of Vietnamese casualties too in my hospital. Mm. So we took care of our allies as well as, quote, the enemy. And I will say that I found that we're all, humanity has much more in common as human beings than divides us. Mm. So when I reflect on Veterans Day, it's with great respect that I have for everybody who served then and now and who serves in any way to others. And at the same time, I feel that I was happy that that experience shaped how I view humanity going forward.
Maureen, could you describe the jewelry you're wearing today?
Oh, I'm wearing my, back in the time of the Vietnam War, POW bracelets were available for a donation to be bought. And I have my POW bracelet from, and it was the name of any veteran who was a prisoner of war and the date that they became a prisoner of war, whether they returned or not. And the name on my bracelet is Captain Charles Barnes, 3 March 6, 1969. I'm wearing a Montagnard bracelet, which one of the wonderful women who volunteered, we had a lot of Vietnamese employees and volunteers at our 67th Evacuation Hospital. The Montagnards were an indigenous part of the Vietnamese population, and I have a beautiful bracelet. I'm wearing my beads. One of the nurses, Ike, who worked in the operating room, made these beads, and I have two sets. One are the colors of the Vietnam flag, and then everybody, when it was your turn to go home, when you were a short timer, so to speak, you received a red, white, and blue necklace of freedom beads, and that's what I'm wearing.
Thank you for describing those for us. I want to bring in a caller now. We have Gordon calling in from Bridgewater. Gordon, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to honor my friend, Rich Morrissey, who died when he came home. He committed suicide.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Gordon. What conflict did your friend Rich serve in?
Vietnam.
In the Vietnam War.
He was a platoon sergeant.
What do you remember about Rich?
He was a funny, great guy.
Well, Gordon, thank you so much for helping us learn about him, about Rich Morrissey, your friend. I can imagine that both of our guests here today have lost people that they loved or cared for during the Vietnam War. And I also really appreciate Gordon bringing up suicide and the struggles that many people face when returning from conflict with post-traumatic stress. Perry, I feel like the conversation around veteran suicide or death by suicide and post-traumatic stress disorder has changed a lot over the years. Could you tell me a little bit about your experience with the return and having to kind of face those face those struggles once you get back?
Yeah. One thing I remember just getting home was how green it was and open, and it was confusing. Even though, you know, I'd only been away for a year, it was very different having been in the jungle and in a wet most of the time, although you had dry periods, but the monsoons hit twice when I was there. But I found myself isolating myself. I had an apartment, and I'd be there, I'd read and do stuff. I wouldn't get out. Mm. And my father finally came and forced me to get down to the VA hospital in White River Junction and talk with the service officer who happened to be a Vietnam veteran. And he actually helped me. I mean, I came out with a 50% permanent from the Navy, and which gave me a little bit of money, but basically fee E4, it wasn't much. And I end up getting a good percentage from the VA from the wounds that I received. And that was extremely helpful in terms of my recovery. But so many of my, you know, people I met, some of them, they weren't wounded, but they were wounded mentally. And and socially, they had a hard time, and they didn't have that type of with the money coming in to help them out. They pretty much had to make it on their own, working or having family. It was tough, and a couple of them did commit suicide. It was, even though we were all going to a group, it still wasn't helping. It was tough. You know, it was hard on them what was going on. One of them was actually married with a couple children, and that was added pressure on him, just knowing he wasn't doing well by his family. And it was very unfortunate, you know, to have that experience.
Maureen, were there supports available for you and other nurses upon your return from Vietnam?
You know, actually, the support for and the recognition of any post-traumatic stress injury or sequela for nurses came much later than the recognition for combat male veterans from that war. And I was dropped off. I was out of the Army when my tour was up, and it was November of 70, and you're on a military plane. And then you're on the charter planes back to Fort Lewis, Washington, in Seattle. And I was given, I landed because I was in summer Army clothes, and I was given a Army green heavier jacket and just left on my own to fly home to New Jersey to my family. And I was very numb. And I felt, my family was so happy to see me. I don't even remember the first 3 months. I think all I did was sleep. Mm. And then I was maybe 24 at this time. And later in life, also Kent State happened while we were in Vietnam too. That was something that went on. And I ended up working in California, going out to California to work, where I had a lot of veteran friends too. But I will say, the way it showed up for many of us later in my years, I came to Vermont in the 70s. I felt like as a nurse, you lost your innocence at a very young age. You witnessed things that most of my peers didn't witness, and you had a lot of responsibility. And you were giving, 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 and we were happy to give. And you also loved your patients because they were like family, and there was no family there very much like the COVID situation in recent years, that civilian medical providers and nurses had to positions they were placed in. So I feel when I got to be a little older, there was a certain delayed partying, having fun. They were wonderful years in a way in Vermont. I lived in the Killington area in the early 70s. But there were certain ways I kind of fell apart. And I didn't know until much later that a lot of it was what was a lot of the nursing type sequela had a lot to do with grief that wasn't ever dealt with or expressed. A lot of depression, for some people addiction, for some people relationship intimacy issues, partner, not having relationships that were meaningful. So a lot of it didn't get really recognized till much later. And I feel nurses weren't even, and they didn't consider themselves military. I mean, we were there to serve with compassion, and we weren't into self-aggrandizement. It was, so a lot of us had trouble really asking for help or really connecting the dots to the Vietnam experience. And much of it occurred in the 80s, a lot of it in nurses.
Yeah. I can imagine that both of you are such such resources for people who might have served after you and are looking for advice on a path forward. Perry, is that a role that you have embraced? I mean, you have a leadership role here with a veterans organization in Vermont. Do you share advice with younger generations, younger veterans? If so, what is it?
Yes, we do. But I think one of the wonderful things about the Vietnam veterans is we started out serving our own. Mm. We had the motto, never again will one group of veterans leave another behind. We were left behind. World War II veterans weren't there for us. So we had to form a group. We had to look out for ourselves. We had to go in represent our interests, to Congress to get things through. But what I find extremely helpful is through our organization, we just didn't continue to serve just Vietnam veterans. We outreached to the younger veterans to help them, bring them in, help them with their benefits, talk to them, provide them support that they needed, family, anything we could do, to provide them some support, let them know that we're there. And, really, it was a good experience, and it was a healing experience for me, being able to do something for these the younger veterans that I had an opportunity to work with.
And Maureen, you mentioned earlier your experience sharing stories of your time in Vietnam through the organization Vets Town Hall. In just a moment, we're going to hear from one of the local organizers from that organization, John Turner. Before we do, I'm wondering how it felt, if you could bring us back to the first time that you, I don't know if it was yesterday or if you've spoken with them earlier, the first time that you kind of stood up to share a story from your time in Vietnam publicly. Was it scary? Was it a relief? Was it a mix of both?
Well, the first time I've done some helped students do research products. I mean, I've spoken to some groups in the hospital I worked with at UVM Medical Center. I mean, I've spoken through the years, but publicly, I will say I think the first one was at the Contois Auditorium downtown, the very first Veterans Town Hall. I can't remember the year that was. Kristen Eaton, another wonderful organizer of this event, probably at least 5 to 7 years ago. And I remember there were several people there, and I wasn't comfortable. Maybe I was a little nervous, but it was, I wrote a few notes, but I just spoke more of what came from my heart, and I described my experience, and I was really honored to speak. And there was a lot of just such grace in all those that listened, and And I was happy to share that experience because there were not many of us there, Vietnam nurses, women in Vietnam, that's at that time women that served as nurses. And I was happy to share what I could from my experience and some of the meaning it had for me then and now and at the time of my talk. And there was wonderful feedback to all of us who spoke because these stories, many people even married to certain of the speakers just never heard these stories. A lot of us never shared these stories, not because we wanted to hold it back, but it's hard sometimes. I remember when I got back from Vietnam, a lot of people, my friends said, tell me about Vietnam, tell me about Vietnam. And yet it took great energy to go back there, and I was happy to do it, but they really only wanted to hear a certain little, they really didn't want it. The essence of that experience was hard to communicate in words in a short time, and some people just wanted short answers or a certain aspect, and there weren't a lot of ears to really hear when I first came back. So fast forward now, I think there's much healing in the storytelling that's been going on. And I'm moved by the other veterans' stories. And I feel there's this gratitude that that the audience are really hearing some of these stories for the first time from their loved ones. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know today we've only scratched the surface of both of your experiences in Vietnam, but I'm so grateful to both of you for coming in today and for telling us about your time in Vietnam. Maureen Dwyer of Essex served as an Army nurse there in Vietnam. Maureen, thank you today.
My pleasure. So happy to be here, and I honor all veterans today who served in any capacity, and especially the Vietnam veterans, and blessings to all.
And Perry Melvin of Shelburne is the president of the Vermont Vietnam Veterans State Council. Perry, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you both for your service. This Veterans Day, we are honoring local vets and giving them some space to share their stories. That is something that the organization Vets Town Hall does all year long. It creates storytelling space for veterans of any era. They have branches in multiple states, including here in Vermont. Joining us now is John Turner, one of the local organizers of Vets Town Hall and a board member. He served in the Marine Corps from 2003 to 2007, and he operates Wild Roots Community Farm in Bristol. John, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me back, Michaela.
Yeah, so we spoke to you about 2 years ago on Vermont Edition. What's changed for Vets Town Hall since then?
We've been able to grow a substantial amount since then. Kristen and I were chatting about this yesterday after the event. And so the town hall itself initially began back in 2015, and it was down in Massachusetts in Marblehead with Sebastian and Representative Moulton. And then she ended up attending the first one in 2016, brought it up here in 2017. And since then, we went from having one a year just in Vermont to having 21 this year throughout several states. So we've been able to get some traction and move things forward, encourage folks to come out, listen to the stories, tell the stories, and just help to bridge the gap between the communities.
And you're hearing from veterans of all different wars and conflicts, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I would love to see more GWAT veterans come out. You know, I was listening to part of the interview with Perry and Maureen, and when I got back from my last deployment to Iraq in 2006, it was really the Vietnam veterans that helped with that transitional process because they weren't as supported when they returned home from war. And the last thing that I really want to see is, you know, another name become a statistic because they didn't have an outlet in order to kind of process whatever it was they went through during or after war. And we have a lot of the older generation of veterans coming out, which I think is phenomenal because a lot of times those guys and gals haven't had the opportunity to share their stories. But I want more of the younger population to come out as well, because the reality is whatever burdens we took on from previous generations who weren't able to process whatever it was that they went through, we're going to continue to carry and then put onto the next generation of warfighter. And so ideally we can continue to work with each other, you know, intergenerationally, but then work to process whatever it was we went through, the good, the bad, the ugly, so that way we no longer carry those burdens and unwanted narratives and are able to move forward in a healthy way.
John, considering the the week that we have had with the 2024 election and the sheer length of this election season, I'm curious how you all address politics or keep it out of these vets town halls events. I mean, wars could be, they are at their root very, yes. They're full of conflict. How do you create a safe space for people who might be on different sides of the aisle?
I'm very clear about that up front, that this is an apolitical event. And we've had a couple people in the past bring politics into it. And there's been discussions about that afterwards. And I don't care what side of the aisle people fall on. I don't care who you vote for. What I care about is that you are respectful of the rules that we have for the town hall itself. And I mean, I'm a pretty pacifist type guy, but I have no problem speaking up if I need to. And so laying the groundwork, saying, hey, this is not a political event. We do acknowledge politicians that come to attend because genuinely I'm very grateful that they're there because it shows that there is a level of wanting to understand what it is veterans experience. But I laid the groundwork down and I know all the other MCs do as well. And that's, we kind of have to just to keep politics out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And could you give us a little bit of a glimpse into the event that Maureen just mentioned, the one in, was it at St. Mike's in Colchester this
last
weekend?
Night.
What were some of the stories that you heard?
So a lot of times we do have some repeat veterans that show up.
Yeah.
But the thing that I always favor are the folks who never initially signed up. They just kind of showed up. And sometimes they were kind of like, hey, you really need to go to this event and just to be a part of it. And they come and then they sit and then they get up afterwards because after we have the registered speaker speak, we open it up to any other veteran who wants to share a story, who feels inclined to because for whatever reason. And that always happens. Not specifically the one that we had last night, but we hosted the first Vermont Town Hall back on October 24th in my hometown of Bristol. And we had this old pilot from the Korean War era get up and tell some stories. And then we had another a Marine veteran get up from my era, just get up and tell some stories. And it always blows me away. Some of these people, some of the vets, the guys and the gals who attend, you know, they've been holding on to these experiences for, 40, 50 years. And have never felt as though it was in an appropriate way to talk about what it was they went through. And that happens far too often, but my favorite aspect of the town hall is after the registered speakers are done and other people come up. We've had, World War II pilots come up, and I don't know, it's just, there's a lot of stories. And for me, I think that this aspect of the veteran, of the warfighter, is really crucial. I think back when I was a kid growing up in Northern Connecticut, and one of the field trips that we had was to the Connecticut Veterans Home. And I was just thinking about this last week because those guys that were in that home, they were all World War I veterans. And there's no other World War I veteran that's around to tell their story anymore. So I think that the more we can encourage folks to come out and share their experience, the better understanding that we're going to have about who we are as individuals, not just as a veteran, but as a human being. And then we can kind of document and hold on to these stories, and hopefully learn from our mistakes and lessons past.
Mm. And you have some expansion efforts in the works right now, right? Or some
yes.
new events that are going to get planned this year, hopefully?
Yes. So last year, I've been working with the veteran community since I got out of the Marine Corps in 2007. And I have always felt almost partially ashamed by the fact that there isn't as much support for the family members and the spouses and the kids of veterans and then also first responders. And so I had brought that up to Sebastian and Kristen about a year and a half ago. And we ended up last April, we had our first family members town hall. And that was to give the family member, whether it was a daughter or a husband or whatever your relationship is to the military service member, the opportunity to share their story of what it means to serve alongside us, but what it is that they experienced because of our service. And what was really cool about that is there were a number of veterans who have shown up to speak at previous town hall events that were there to talk about their time as being a family member of their dad that was in Vietnam or... I'm sorry, it kind of works me up a little bit because I've seen a lot of family members suffer because of service, because there isn't the support that's necessary for them. And I think that that was probably one of the most profound town halls that we've had. It's really easy to be a veteran and to go from free thing to free thing, and to be, you know, blessed with thank yous and yellow ribbons and all that. But oftentimes it's the families that are left behind, and we need to change that. We really need to change that. And so the idea is that I believe in March 27th, I think we're having the next family member town hall. And then we're working on getting together some of the first responder ones. So bringing out fire, EMS, law enforcement, whoever to kind of go through the same process. You know, for us as veterans, if we're on deployment, we do our job. That's our job. We come home. There's a little bit of transitional period. But for folks that are active first responders in that community, they don't really have that. They're at their job. They're at a scene, as traumatic as that can be. And then all of a sudden they're home with their family, expected to be, you know, normal with their kids or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more we can have conversations and begin to expand this project, the better off we're going to be as a community.
What can the community do to support your work and to support Vets Town Hall so that these events can keep happening?
Yeah, so go to www.vetstownhall.org/donate. We are a nonprofit organization, so and all the tax deductible codes are there. And so if you need that for whatever your legal purposes are, but you can go ahead and donate to the cause. And that's going to allow us to continue to promote these events and expand. We're also in the process right now of creating a fitness event, which will launch in the springtime, the 22 Peaks Challenge. So there's a statistic that's very well known in the veteran community that 22 veterans commit suicide each day. And so what we want to do with this is not just bring awareness to veteran suicide, but we want people to actively engage in the process of improving the quality of their lives through physical activity and mental health, and just getting outside and being a part of nature and being a part of their community. And so the fitness challenge itself, anyone can sign up for it. There'll be a cost associated with it, but the proceeds go back into the organization and then also to a t-shirt that participants will get, is you have to complete 22 mountain peaks with a minimum of 22 pounds in a backpack. And then from there, you have to have a certain elevation gain that you need to achieve.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's easy in Vermont because we got a lot of hikers, you know, so we just want people to get out and support the organization.
Yeah. Wow. What a wonderful way to combine physical activity with supporting the work. And it feels very motivating for me to get in shape I can contribute to. John Turner with Vets Town Hall, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And for keeping this work going year-round, not just on Veterans Day, which is when we happen to be speaking to you today. That is all the time that we have for today's show. But if you have a story that you would like to share, perhaps you are a Vietnam vet or somebody in your family is, we would still love to hear it. You can email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Tomorrow on the show, we are going to listen together to an episode of the podcast Brave Little State. It is all about invasive species that are changing Vermont's ecosystems. We're going to follow it up with a live discussion about the critters who are living in Lake Champlain, some of which belong there and some which do not. Today's show was directed by Aaliyah Papes and Liz Fullerton. Our managing producer is John Ahrens. Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro are our producers, and Kelly Delorier was our call screener. Our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.